This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Everybody gets an A. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
So-called grade inflation is rising at our colleges and universities. We'll explore what's behind it.
More seniors are showing up to shooting ranges.
Why Syracuse is the unsympathetic underdog in this year's Final Four.
And WWE superstar Roman Reigns previews WrestleMania while discussing his hectic schedule.
We travel nonstop. I mean, typically, you know, I'm out on the road five days a week, so very, very limited time at home. But, you know, it's what we signed up for, and it's the way, you know, I provide for my family.
Roman Reigns talks about life as a pro wrestler later in the hour. Well, if you shoot at the range on occasion, you may have noticed that the customers are a little grayer these days. The National Rifle Association says there's been a big jump in the number of people over 65 who've taken a basic firearm training course as of late. In fact, Wall Street Journal reporter James Haggerty says gun dealers around the country agree that more seniors are showing up for lessons. James, what have you noticed?
I noticed a little item in a Ohio newspaper talking about a senior center there that was arranging trips to a shooting range for its members, and I got a bit curious why they were interested, and I started calling gun dealers around the country, and they all confirmed that, yes, we're seeing a lot more older people coming in to learn how to shoot pistols.
And why? Any overarching reason?
Mainly because of the fear of crime and terrorism. Secondarily, there are some people who are just looking for a hobby, and shooting at a range is something that doesn't require as much mobility as, say, golf or tennis.
So is this a regional thing, or are we seeing it just about everywhere?
Well, I think it's pretty much across the country.
All right. So, I mean, this has always been available as a hobby. So is it easy to pin down, say, new marketing efforts by gun ranges, or is this really terrorism?
I don't think it's mainly being driven as a hobby. I think it's more being driven by people being concerned about their personal safety.
That's what I mean, yeah. So this has come over, fairly recently, last few years since
ISIS?
Yeah,
a lot of the dealers said they'd noticed it in the past few years. Lots of stories about terrorist events, about shootings in malls and schools. This seems to have created a climate of fear and made a lot of people, not just old people, but a lot of people think, do I need to do something to protect myself? But I think the change has been particularly marked among the senior citizens.
How about that? So give us some numbers. What's it like?
Numbers are not easy to come by. The NRA says that the number of senior citizens taking basic firearms courses has quadrupled in the past 5 years. It's still a fairly small part of their total, but it's the fastest growing part. And several of the gun dealers told me that, you know, senior citizens now account for 20-30% of their classes, whereas they used to be just a very minor presence.
So are there a lot of first-timers then by that measure?
Yes, I think so. There are a lot of people who are first-timers or people who may have gone hunting long ago, but now they decided they would like a pistol and they want to improve their skills. Many times they want to qualify for a concealed carry permit, which typically requires you to pass a test.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter James Haggerty. His piece is called More Seniors Fearing Crime Flock to Shooting Ranges. Are there physical demands, James, that are challenging for, say, somebody, 60, 70s, in their 80s?
Yes, there are. I mean, if you're arthritic, that can be a problem in terms of pulling the trigger, loading the gun. If your eyesight is poor, it might be more difficult for you. You can get special laser guides for your gun, and some guns are easier to handle than others, so the gun dealers will typically work with these people and try to find something that they're comfortable with.
I know you spoke with at least a couple of women, too, who are doing this, right? What are they saying?
Well, they said, you know, we feel like, some of them said we're scared of guns, but we feel like we need to learn how to do this, and it's a matter of security. Some of them said, you know, we live alone. We feel like we need to protect ourselves in an emergency.
What kind of weapons do they choose, I guess, one, to use at a firing range, and then the two, are they actually buying, what kind of weapons are they buying, or guns?
It seems to be mainly pistols and fairly lightweight ones, because these are ones that can be carried around. This is a gun that is seen as good for self-defense.
All right, I'm not a gun owner. What would be an example of a light pistol, for example?
Well, there are many different brands. There's the Glock, there's Smith & Wesson. There are a lot of pistols today that are made out of plastics. They're lighter. And there's some people who prefer the old-style metal revolvers as well, because they're simpler in some ways.
Thanks, James. Wall Street Journal reporter James Haggerty. It's 12 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, more and more students get A's in college. Is this a form of bribery? Thanks for being with us. Hey, to hear a podcast of our program during the week, please visit our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. You can also check out places like SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. With college becoming more expensive, schools may feel the need to reward the investment with an A grade, even when it's undeserved. Rebecca Downs at Red Alert Politics says we're seeing an ongoing spike in college grade inflation. Rebecca, what do we have?
So this is from a recent analysis posted by Stuart Rodziker, I hope I'm not butchering his last name, and Chris Healy. They posted it on grade inflation. It's very interesting. There are a lot of graphs, and they notice that, quite fittingly, this is the student as consumer era or the consumer era. So it's kind of on the basis that, well, the customer always has to be right, because students and their parents who are paying these high tuition costs are the customers, and they expect something for the high price of tuition. So rather than just say, okay, well, you didn't earn an A, here's a B or a B plus or something different than that, they just say, oh, it's easier if I give everyone an A. These are professors, and the professors, they're kind of under a lot of pressure, because they have to keep their students happy and thus keep the administration happy. And it could affect tenure and promotion, you know, especially with parents and students complaining, how come I didn't get an A or my child get an A? It's very, like, entitled culture now.
So for years, it was you pay to go to college, you have to work hard, and hopefully you get A's. Now, this generation is saying, I pay a lot of money. If I don't get A's, I'll leave and spend my money somewhere that I can?
It seems like it could be that, which is, it's kind of silly, because students who actually earns an A now? Because if you earn that A, it means just as much as the student who, oh, look, he handed in an assignment, let's give him an A.
You feel there's actual pressure from administrators and sometimes even professors that if they don't provide the A's, that students will take their money to other schools?
The analysis did say, and I'm quoting this now, that with professors, it's a new and more personal exigency with respect to grading. To keep their leadership happy and to ensure their tenure and promotion, they had to focus on keeping students happy. And what makes the students and their parents more happy? Me saying this, you know, with an A.
We're speaking with Rebecca Downs at Red Alert Politics. She's got a piece called Everyone Gets an A, College Grade Inflation Spiking. Does this have anything to do with millennials?
Speaking as a millennial, and, you know, I've done a lot of pieces on how entitled millennials feel, I think it absolutely does. B's and C's are average, and they want to be, you know, as the researchers put down, it's the era of A becoming ordinary. So the B and C is not ordinary anymore. And parents don't want their students to be, their children to be ordinary. They think their children are the best. That's how I see it.
Is this like what happened during the Vietnam era, where professors boosted grades for some students to keep them from going to war?
Yeah, so in some ways, I don't know how more understandable it is, but at least it's a specific reason for why students were getting higher grades than they deserved. They didn't want to send them off to professors did not want these students to have to go off to an unpopular war. You could say, well, they should have tried that much harder then, but at least, as I see it, the argument is more there. And even still, the grades were not necessarily They were higher than they needed to be. And then into the 80s, it became, this is the student consumer era, and we haven't left it yet. And how expensive colleges and how entitled students feel, and their parents especially, who are paying for it, it seems like it's not going to end.
Thanks, Rebecca. Rebecca Downs at Red Alert Politics. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Some people really hate doing their taxes. Did you know that all identity thieves need to file a fake tax return is your Social Security number and your date of birth? It's that easy. Nearly $6 billion in fraudulent tax refunds got paid out in a single year recently due to identity theft. Identity thieves can also use information from your tax documents to commit other crimes, like draining your bank accounts. Free credit monitoring won't do anything to help fix an identity theft problem, but LifeLock will. If you're a victim of identity theft, LifeLock's team of specialists here in the U.S. will work to resolve your case, and you'll get peace of mind now and all year long. Memberships start at just $9.99 a month, plus applicable taxes. Call 800-916-7170 or visit LifeLock.com now and use promo code Gordon. That's promo code Gordon to save 10% on your membership. 800-916-7170. That's 800-916-7170. Thanks for being with us. Since November, the sports channel that airs New York Yankees games, known as YES, has been blacked out on Comcast. But as opening day approaches, the stakes are rising and acrimony between sides is mounting. That's always the case, right, in these negotiations. However, this time, as Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Futterman writes, America's sports rights bonanza is showing signs of age. Matthew, what have you found?
I think what we've basically found is that the tides are turning a little bit, and there seems to be a shift in the power of what has been essentially a 20-year argument between distributors and programmers about how much people are actually willing to pay for sports on television. I think for years the distributors were really sort of held hostage, is quite the wrong, but they were really at the mercy of the programmers who have these exclusive rights to local sports teams. But I think what you're seeing now is there's just so many alternatives, and you have a whole sort of generational shift of people who actually don't even have cable subscriptions. And you know, there's just a real shift in leverage, seemingly, between the content and the power of this content that was these local sports teams and the distributors.
All right, so this generational change, does that mean that there's less interest in sports, or they have, I don't know, different ways to
interests? People are still really passionate about sports. They just have a lot of other options, and they seem to be able to live with the idea of not having the most beloved sports teams on television for every game, every regular season game. Mm. You've seen that there's more than half of the Los Angeles market is entering its third season without the Dodgers, and it really hasn't seemed to have caused much of a ruckus out there. Mm. 15 years ago, when the Yankees were fighting with Cablevision, it was like you were keeping vital nutrients away from needy people.
That's right.
But there's just so much more out there now. There's so many more ways to fill that sports bug that people are not clamoring for regular season sports in their living rooms the way they once did.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Futterman. His piece is called Cost of Sports TV Raises Stakes in Yankees and Comcast Fight. And once you've missed it for a season, you realize that life goes on. And that's the dangerous part, I guess for all on the sports media side, right?
Yeah, I think that's the big danger for, sports, everybody but the NFL, and which puts all but about, 16 games or so on free television. That's the big danger. And not only is it once you've missed it for a season, you realize life goes on, but if you're a kid growing up and, you don't have it, and it's not part of your fabric of your childhood, it's probably not going to be part of your fabric of your adulthood either.
Are there other disputes like this that are going to come up in, I don't know, the next year or two that we're going to see?
I think
really
you're
going
to see them happen more and more over the next 5 to 7 years. And you're already seeing it. I mean, you've seen it. We've seen it in Los Angeles for several years now. We saw it in Houston. And, you know, the Houston channel that that has the Astros and Rockets continues to be not particularly well distributed. It's changed owners. Comcast owned it at one point and had to put it into bankruptcy because its distribution was so limited. And this is all goes. I mean, this all goes back to the teams demanding very, very high rights fees because they have very high salaries to pay, and then those costs eventually being passed on to consumers. In this case, it's been passed on to 100% of the pay television subscribers, even though a very small percentage of those subscribers actually watch sports on television. Now, granted, they may watch sports in larger numbers than they watch any other single thing on television, but there's a lot of other things on television, so it's still a very small percentage of the customers. And I think the sense is it really fair to force everybody to pay for something that only a handful, not more than a handful, but that only a small percentage of people really want to see?
Could that ultimately affect, say, baseball salaries and bring them down?
I think eventually that's where you may be heading. If we get to a point where the companies tell the teams, you know what, we just can't pay these rights fees anymore, we have to negotiate these deals, renegotiate these deals, and you do see some collapse of the market. Now, they have very long-term deals, in fact, so it will take a while in order to get there, and baseball's been pretty good at starting to try and find other ways of selling its products, but there has been nothing like the guaranteed stream of cable revenues that have just forced franchise values to skyrocket over the last 20 years.
Could be up for some significant changes potentially, right, if some of those scenarios play out. Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Futterman, who's based in New York. By the way, to hear a program that we air during the weekdays, please check out our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. You can also find it on places like SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and TuneIn. Thanks for spending time with us on the first full weekend in April. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, is Syracuse an underdog in the Final Four or not? Also, WWE superstar Roman Reigns on life as a pro wrestler. He also previews WrestleMania. And the bold baseball prediction for this season. That story in about 20 minutes. Is America poor? Is she rich? How about somewhere in between? Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman has been in an ongoing argument with supporters of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, who says the United States is poor. Rick disagrees. He says, look at the $19 trillion in national debt, or about $160,000 per U.S. household. If Washington had to pay that off all of a sudden, he says it couldn't possibly come up with the money. And if you can't pay your debts, you must be poor. He says that logic might make sense for a family or even a business, but not necessarily for the U.S. economy as a whole. Rick, set this up.
Well, a lot of people say, well, look at the huge national debt. It's more than $19 trillion. We cannot possibly be a wealthy country if we owe that much money. But we're confusing public assets and private assets. So what I did is I just went to figure out, what is the total net worth of the United States? Turns out the Federal Reserve has this data, and it shows that when you account for all the debts of government, private sector, all the households in the country, and then account for all the assets, the United States has a net worth of almost $100 trillion. And that includes the $19.3 trillion national debt. So we have an enormous amount of wealth in this country, including all the debt. So that all of that is net of the debt. That is how much the whole country is worth. That's an incredible amount of money.
Didn't you partially write this in response to what you've heard from Trump supporters?
Right. So Donald Trump has said America is poor. P-O-O-R, poor. We're one of the richest nations in the world, but his contention is that we are poor, and mainly because of that national debt. And that's just ridiculous. If you're only talking about the government, well, yes, the government has a negative net worth on account of the debt, but America's wealth has never resided in the government. It resides in the private sector, and obviously when the government needs money, it gets it from the private sector in the forms of mostly taxes and fees on something. So nobody wants it to happen, but if the government needed more revenue, which it very well may in the future, it can do something governments do, which is raise taxes, tap into that private wealth, and fund whatever we as a nation decide the government needs to fund. So the money is there. There's an incredible amount of money there. It's true we could not pay off our national debt all at once if we had to, but we don't have to. I mean, no, there's nothing, you know, these are 10-year bonds and 30-year bonds in some cases, and there's nothing that says you would ever have to pay that off all at once.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. His piece is called America is Still Extremely Wealthy, and these numbers prove it. It sounds like people want you to just say that we are poor.
We've had quite a time discussing this, and people just will not accept the idea that you can be a wealthy country and be that much in debt. But, you know, there are analogs here in, you know, the way we all live, for example. I mean, if you take out a mortgage, you are in debt, and you couldn't pay off your mortgage all at once if you had to, but it's a 30-year mortgage usually, so you don't have to pay it off all at once. The government's debt is different than a mortgage, but incidentally, the government's debt is too high. It's more than 100% of GDP, about 105%. It should be down around 60% of GDP. But it is manageable given the amount of wealth we have in the country.
You do mention that there's one caveat, and not to sound like Bernie Sanders, but wealth in America overall is divided very unevenly.
Yeah, and that's not just a talking point of the left. It's, you know, almost all economists will tell you objectively that income inequality in the United States is worse, and in some cases much worse, than in most other advanced economies. That is just the way we are in this country. We tend to have relatively low tax rates. We have less of a safety net, fewer social programs for people who fall behind. And there certainly is a plausible argument to make that we should do something about income inequality so that more people share the wealth.
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman, who's based in New York. 21 minutes now before the hour on this weekend. Coming up next, is Syracuse an underdog or not?
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
Yeah, good April to you. The NCAA tournament is in its final stages. Two Final Four games are Saturday in Houston, featuring Villanova versus Oklahoma in the early game, then Syracuse versus North Carolina in the nightcap. By one measure, even as a 10 seed, Syracuse is an unsympathetic underdog. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Three teams are kinda, sorta supposed to be there. One isn't. In the men's NCAA tournament semifinals tonight, Oklahoma will take on Villanova, and top seed North Carolina will face 10th seed Syracuse, a team that wasn't even expected to make the field. Here with more on this year's underdog team is Chris Herring of the Wall Street Journal. Chris, the casual fan doesn't seem to be rallying around Syracuse this year. Why not?
You know, normally when you talk about an underdog with regards to the NCAA tournament, you're thinking about a school like George Mason or Virginia Commonwealth, VCU from a couple years ago. And these are schools that are smaller that don't really have the rich basketball traditions that a school like Syracuse does. Syracuse has won a national title. They have a ton of NBA stars in the league. And so they're kind of a powerhouse. The only difference this year is that Syracuse was a 10 seed, and that a lot of people felt like they didn't deserve to make it into the tournament because they really struggled this year and weren't very good in the conference at times. So they kind of have the profile statistically of an underdog team, but when you think about just the size of the program and the fact that they get all these star recruits, just historically this is not the sort of school. They've been to six Final Fours at this point, so it's not the kind of school that really fits the traditional underdog model.
But they have come back from behind in a number of games in this tournament. Does that not make for a feel-good story?
Well, it would, especially the game that they played this past Sunday against Virginia. They're down by 16 you know, looking at the win probability model, they had a 1.4% chance of winning with about 9 minutes left in the game, and then they obviously pressed Virginia and forced them into a lot of turnovers. But the other part of it, too, aside from just the fact that they're not really the huge, huge underdog on paper, you know, because of the size of the program, there's also the, you know, a lot of people just don't like kind of some of the issues that they've been dealing with, the academic fraud issues and some of the stuff that they've been accused of. Jim Boeheim, their coach, was not only suspended but handed a very, very harsh penalty in the sense that they vacated 108 of his wins, pushing him down, I think, sixth all-time in wins from second. And so, you know, that's a really unusual step for the NCAA to take, but they felt like some of the things in Syracuse's case with academics and skirting drug testing rules and stuff like that were just so beyond the pale and so egregious that they felt like they had to come down hard on them. And so they didn't participate in the postseason last year, and now they're bounced back already, you know, less than a year later, basically, to not only make the tournament but now get into the Final Four. And so the fact that they're playing against North Carolina, another school that's kind of got a cloud hanging over them from an academic standpoint, just rubbed some people the wrong way.
And you mentioned some of the problems that Syracuse has had. They started this year without Jim Boeheim, correct?
They were able to start the year with him, but then the suspension kicked in a little bit later and forced him to sit out for 9 games once they figured out exactly the length of the suspension and which games he had to miss.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with The Wall Street Journal's Chris Herring. 14 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, WWE superstar Roman Reigns. Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to the state that went from 49th to 10th best in corporate business income tax, where 2,000 burdensome and unnecessary regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years, and is now home to the 6th best entrepreneurial climate. All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice of your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us. The biggest event on the professional wrestling calendar is this weekend. It's WrestleMania 32 from AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. The featured match, WWE superstar Roman Reigns versus champion Triple H for the title. We're joined now by Roman Reigns, who turned a football career into a wrestling gig, much like the rest of his family. Roman, some are saying attendance records could fall with this one.
Yeah, you know, it's been a great week. We have the ability to possibly break our own record. You know, people are throwing around all kinds of numbers, but I think as part of WWE, we're just trying to focus on that 93,000 mark. So 100,000, that sounds crazy, but right now I think we're zeroing in on our personal record.
I'm just looking at the list of injuries right now to some of your big names. Man, like Cena, right? Rollins, Sting, Daniel Bryan, even, you know, Nikki Bella, Orton, all these guys. I mean, that has to be somewhat of a concern, but I know you can't wrestle scared, for example. How do you approach that?
You know, and like you just said, you can't wrestle scared. And, you know, from growing up and playing football and other sports, you always heard if you go half speed, that's when you get hurt. Yeah. So for me, I try to, you know, go full speed on everything, you know, put my all into everything and you know, attack that mat, as we like to say. So that's the big thing, is you just got to bring it every single night, and that's what I plan on doing, is bringing that big fight. It's going to go down.
I know you had a football career. Is it true that Georgia Tech, you were teammates with Megatron, Calvin Johnson?
Yeah, I was. We're both team captains. I believe he was a junior and I was a senior. Played a lot of football, won some big games with him. He was an incredible football player. It was awesome to see, you know, all the great things he's been able to do as well.
Tell me that you speared him at least once in practice.
Man, I probably tried, but Megatron, he's a bad man. And, you know, if I got to give myself a little excuse, I played in the trenches. He was the wideout, so mm-hmm. he had a couple, you know, a couple feet head start. So if he didn't, you know, run down the field, I'd probably be able to catch him, but he cheated me in that.
Fair enough. We're speaking with WWE superstar Roman Reigns. He competes Sunday night in WrestleMania. Go back to the health issue for just a minute. Practically the whole male side of your family, I feel like, has been involved in professional wrestling at some point. How's somebody like Dad or your brother? I think there's even a cousin who was involved, right? Health-wise, I know there are concerns. There was a recent report talking about concussions and your falls and things like that.
Well, you know, I'm from a wrestling family, the Anoa'i family. We've had so many different WWE superstars and different you know, guys participate and really take on this life, and that's a part of it. You know, I mean, we're living in a world now where, you know, there's a lot of physical, you know, sports out there, and we are a performance, you know, being WWE superstars, but it's a very physical performance. You know, it's not ballet. There is a good bit of physicality, but we also have, you know, a one heck of a staff, you know, a medical staff that takes all the precautions to keep us safe. We have a wellness policy to maintain our health and to keep us on track. So we have a lot of different, you know, things, and for lack of a better word, you know, all these different devices and things to help us, you know. So that's something that we've really graduated and stepped up to the next level, and that's why, you know, anytime anything like a concussion happens, we take the proper proper steps to overcome that.
How much travel do you guys actually do?
We travel nonstop. I mean, typically, you know, I'm out on the road five days a week, so very, very limited time at home, but, you know, it's what we signed up for, and it's the way, you know, I provide for my family.
All right, so on that note, do they ever travel with you? That's got to be a difficult relationship to maintain at times.
From time to time, but, you know, my daughter, she's 8, and she's in school, so she's in the full swing of everything now, and you know, she's got her life going on, and she's growing up so fast. So anytime we can get them out on the road, it's a great time. They'll be coming down here to Dallas, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Roman Reigns, WWE superstar, on behalf of Snickers, by the way, the exclusive presenting sponsor of WrestleMania. 6 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Baseball season's here, right? And the USA Today Sports Baseball staff is out with a bold prediction. As they say, it's not enough to see the Cubs win the World Series. These sports writers want more, what they call real history. Someone who was actually alive remembers the World Series in 1918. The one that started 3 weeks early with World War I raging in Europe, causing the regular season to prematurely end, with the World Series starting September 5th. It was the Cubs and Red Sox, with the first three games played at Comiskey Park because of its seating capacity, and the last three at Fenway. The Cubs limited the great Babe Ruth to a lone hit in his 5 at-bats, but Ruth beat them with his arm, going 2-0 with a 1.06 ERA, with the Red Sox winning the series in 6 games. Cubs offense so feeble that ace Hippo Vaughn pitched 3 complete games, yielded a 1.00 ERA, and lost twice. It was the only time these teams would meet in the postseason. USA Today has its fingers crossed for Cubs-Red Sox again this year. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.